Welcome back to the Big Green Politics Podcast. In our previous episode, we talked to Jamila Schaefer about the German Greens, their campaigning strategy for the upcoming EU elections, and how they do green politics may differ from state to state. In this episode, we're focusing on a different shade of green politics in Germany. We're also talking about local politics, where Greens seem to shine the most. I talked to Roderick Kefferputz, who works for the State Ministry of Baden-Württemberg, where the Greens have been ruling in coalition since 2011, under the first ever Green minister-president. Take a listen and enjoy. Thank you, Roderick, for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
As you know, since October, we've been receiving great news from the Green parties of Germany, Luxembourg, Belgium, and Canada. But today, let's focus on and talk about Germany. At state level, the Greens have just burst into the scene with unprecedented levels of support, with more than 18% of the vote in Bavaria, which is twice of what they got in 2013. So what happened? Why have German voters basically flocked to the Greens?
Well, I think what we're seeing in Germany right now is a phenomenon that we've been seeing in many other EU member states all over Europe, basically, which is that the political party landscape is in massive flux and is completely changing. Traditional parties or traditional people parties are losing support and are not able to represent the diversity of the population. So we're seeing how the Social Democrats are massive problems in France and in the Netherlands and in other places. And I think the Greens, at least in Germany, have been able to push into this vacuum. And for that, I see several reasons. I mean, first of all, in Germany right now, the Greens are a united, cohesive party. We used to be a couple of years back quite divided between a kind of a left wing of the party and a center-right wing of a party, or more centrist wing of the party. And right now, we've overcome these internal conflicts and these internal divisions and have been able to present ourselves as a united party. And the other parties in Germany are actually the ones that are suffering from inner party conflicts and divisions. We're seeing it in the SPD. We're seeing it in the CDU, the conservatives. We're seeing it in Die Linke, the far left. And what makes the Greens also right now in a unique position in Germany is that the fact that we have a clear stance on fundamental issues, fundamental values that are important to us. We are clearly defending the open, liberal, social market economy model that we have in Germany. We're one of the only parties who's not being driven by the AfD, the far-right party Alternative für Deutschland. We're not being driven by their discourse. We're not letting ourselves be influenced by their discourse. We are a clear pillar that's defending the open liberal society. We're also the only party that's clearly fighting climate change and wanting to do something about it. We're the only party clearly fighting the loss of biodiversity that we're seeing. And I think that makes a very special offer for voters in Germany, because they see a united Green party that has a clear stance on all these issues.
Yeah, this is also incredible to see the progression of the Greens, because just 1 year ago, 2017, mm-hmm. The German Greens did kind of poorly in the state elections in Lower Saxony or North Rhine-Westphalia. Mm-hmm. So it's incredible how things can change in just 1 year, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, every situation is different. But I think within this 1 year, what changed is the fact that we had these Jamaica negotiations. So after the federal mm-hmm. election, there was the attempt to form a Jamaica coalition, which is between the CDU, CSU, the conservatives, the Greens, and the FDP, the liberals. And in these coalition negotiations, we presented ourselves as a clear, pragmatic, but values and ideals oriented party. What I mean with that is that we have our goals and our values that we defend. So we want to, of course, defend the right to migration. We want to fight against climate change. But when it comes down to it and having negotiations, we are willing to make some compromises. And that's what we did. We were calling for a target in our election program that said no more fossil fuel burning cars by 2030. And in the spirit of compromise, we said, okay, we will get rid of this target. But then you have to meet us halfway by, for example, having more tighter emissions targets or by ending coal-fired power plants in Germany. And within those negotiations, again, we presented ourselves as a united force. We had 14 negotiators coming from the wide spectrum of the party, from the left wing of the party, from the conservative wing, from the liberal wing of the party, and they all came together for once. And again, like I said, I think it showed people the Greens are pragmatic, and at the same time, they're not willing to give up their fundamental views and their fundamental values, but trying to find compromises that bring them closer to what they want to achieve. And I think also what's interesting in Lower Saxony, North Rhine-Westphalia, is that if you compare those two states, those two regions, to the elections that we had in Bavaria, in Hesse, in Baden-Württemberg, what becomes very interesting is that in those places where we did really strongly, in Bavaria, for example, we did so because we also went into rural areas. We didn't just confine ourselves to the open liberal cities. We actually went to the rural areas and talked to the citizens there, trying to find out what are the issues that are important to you, trying to engage with them. So bursting beyond this kind of green cosmopolitan bubble and really talking to the diversity of society. I mean, we campaigned in beer tents wearing traditional Bavarian outfits. And I think that's a very different style of campaign. It's a very different style of engaging with people than when you're just trying to engage with your own kind, so to speak. And in those countries, Bavaria, Baden-Württemberg, we didn't just engage with ourselves. We engaged with all of society. And we made a campaign program offer to all of society where everybody could find themselves. And I think that's the difference. And that's the difference between being a niche party that is below double digits and being a party that is able to break out of its niche and make a wider offer to a wider variety of people.
Yeah, getting out of that echo chamber and bubble. Yes, going exactly. More local. And so you've been listing out what has been key to the success of the German Greens this year. So what would be your word of advice to other Green parties around Europe and the world about how to do the same?
This is difficult. I mean, it all depends, of course, from your situation. Different Green parties in different countries have different strategies and might find different ways to success. Looking at Germany, I think the lesson that we're seeing right now is how important it is to not just be busy talking to yourself, but get engaged with society, get engaged with the people out there, and also people that are different from you and not, you know, not all the same. Senator Kennedy in 1985 once made a statement that I think really captures that kind of spirit. He was talking about the Democratic Party, and he was saying there's a difference between being a party that cares about workers and being a worker party. There's a difference between being a party that cares about women and being the women's party, or being the party that cares about minorities and being the minority party. Mm-hmm. We must be a party that ticks all these things together and has this wide span of different issues covering different segments of the society. And I think that's what can lead to success.
Yeah, and you mentioned the state of Baden-Württemberg, your state. So you can also talk to us about what happens when the Greens govern a state in Germany, because they've been such a powerful force in where you live. So what difference has it made having the Greens governing your state? What changes have they made?
When we came to power in Baden-Württemberg, that was, of course, history in the making. The state of Baden-Württemberg had always been run by the CDU, by the conservatives. And for them, they had even considered it a birthright that the state of Baden-Württemberg would always be in their hands. So this was really a massive, massive historic change in the history of Baden-Württemberg. And we came to power in a special set of circumstances. It was a couple of weeks after the nuclear catastrophe in Fukushima, and it was also not too long after big protests had erupted in Stuttgart against this new $1 million reconstruction of the train station. And the police intervention, the massive police intervention that the CDU had ordered and quashed the demonstrators, which had led to a massive outcry. And all of these factors together helped the Greens come to second place and thereby be able to get into government with the first ever Green minister president in Germany. And once we came into government, we immediately showed people that we aren't just some radical Greens protesting on the streets, as has been the case many years ago. We are actually, so to speak, have grown up and we are able to govern. We're able to govern really well. And what we've done, particularly in the state of Baden-Württemberg, which is a very industrial heavy state, is that we've been able to combine these extremes or these poles that people have always said you are not able to combine. So, for example,
yeah, it's the land
economy.
Of Porsche and Mercedes, isn't it?
Exactly. But, you know, people say, oh, you can't be an ecologist without hurting the economy, or you can't be sustainable without being competitive. And we've always said, no, you can. You can be both. You can bring economy and ecology together. You can be more resource efficient, more energy efficient, and thereby become more competitive and more profitable. And this is what we have driven in the state of Baden-Württemberg. We've launched a agency for resource efficiency. We had immediately launched a resource efficiency program and an energy efficiency program. Wind power has been massively increased during our time of governance. Solar energy has been massively increased. And actually, we have had economic growth rates during our time of government, which has been unseen since the 80s. So our efforts at making Baden-Württemberg more sustainable, making the industry more sustainable, has actually turned out to make Baden-Württemberg also more competitive and more robust to go into the future. And what we're doing right now is that just a year ago, we've launched a transformation dialogue with the car industry. So we have brought car industry together with civil society, with trade unions, with universities and academia and government to discuss with them the transformation that the car industry is seeing right now. The car is being fundamentally changed. In Germany, we're still very strong in these old internal combustion engine cars, but the future is clean vehicles, be it electromobility or just generally zero emission vehicles. Autonomous vehicles. And we wanted to drive that change because that's where the future is and that's what the future markets are going to want to have. And that's why we've put forth this dialogue to discuss with the car industry in Baden-Württemberg, how can we together push this transformation forward to make sure that we keep our car industry in Baden-Württemberg, that we keep the jobs that are reliant on the car industry, how we make it more competitive and more sustainable. So I think this triangle of sustainability, jobs, and competitiveness, these three things that we have to balance and find a way where we can advance all three at the same time. And that's what we're doing together with the car industry.
And you still engage. That's the pattern, I guess.
Yes.
Before and after the elections, you keep engaging.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you just mentioned the traditionalist centrist parties failing. And we also need to talk about Angela Merkel, who is a very interesting political figure in terms of having dominated German and European politics for well over a decade. Mm. But she just said her fourth term will be her last, and so she won't be seeking re-election in 2021. Mm. So should we see Merkel leaving the political scene as her failing or centrism failing in Germany?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Merkel has done a lot of good things for Germany. She has been able to get this country through a lot of crises. She has been able to help the EU in a lot of these crises situations. Now, of course, you can always say she could have done more and she was wavering too often. She was too often muddling through. Absolutely. I also believe that. But if we look around us right now, what kind of world we're living in, where there's the rise of illiberal populism, where we see strong authoritarian leaders coming back, be it Bolsonaro in Brazil. We're seeing what Putin is doing in Ukraine right now, what Erdogan is doing in Turkey. Merkel has been a pillar for liberal democracy in Germany, and she's really done a lot. But on the other hand, she's been in power now for 13 years, and I think there is a kind of Merkel fatigue with a lot of people. And I wouldn't even say centrism is failing, but I would say that maybe the center is changing a little bit. And it's become maybe more difficult to occupy the center as well, because there has also been somewhat of a polarization in German society, as we've seen all over Europe.
Yeah, I actually want to talk to you about that as well, because you mentioned the AfD being on the rise as well. So looking at how they do politics and what kind of Germany they represent, they represent a Germany gazing back to a closed-off society. But then we have the German Greens functioning as the liberal antidote to the AfD, offering an opposite image. Socially liberal, open to immigration, outward-looking, and that's kind of their unique selling point, isn't it? So looking at these two different parties from two ends of the political spectrum, both on their eyes, would it be right if we said the German society is getting politically divided and polarized at this point?
I think there is an increasing polarization, not just in Germany, but we see that in many societies in the West. And the kind of thesis that I have, but I don't know whether this really is the case, but this is what gives me some explanation, is that we are seeing an intense individualization in society, with people thinking more and more about themselves, about who they are, and about who they are as an individual, and who their identity is. And we also see that with all these technologies, digital technologies, is always really about the individual. You know, what am I doing right now? What am I posting right now? What can I show other people what I'm doing right now? And at the same time, however, we're seeing a real desire for community, for coming together, for being part of something. Because, you know, of course, that's the other side. You know, you have massive individualism, but at the same time, you got this massive desire for actually being part of something greater. And that's why I think some of these movement politics or these party movements have some success, because you can be an individual and keep your identity, but still be part of something larger. And I think also the refugees welcome movement was in the beginning such a wave in Germany where people felt like, oh, I can be part of something. I can help people and, you know, do something good. And in the end, I would say it's also a struggle for recognition. People want to be recognized, which, again, you also see in digital technologies, where when you post things, people basically want to be recognized for what they're doing or what they've posted or what they're showing. But there's a whole lot of people who feel like they're not being recognized, who feel like they're being ignored. And of course, you know, then you have populist leaders such as Trump and others who say, oh, it's the silent majority, the invisible group of people you can't see, and nobody's talking about them and their problems.
This is victimization, maybe.
Partially victimization, but also partially that maybe we have not been asking the right questions in politics and always looking at, well, what are the issues that people face in certain areas, in rural areas, for example. And that, of course, there's also with so much change happening. I mean, we've seen such a tremendous amount of change over these last couple of years, you know, in our own politics, in the international arena, in trade, with digital technologies, that a lot of people probably find it difficult to cope with that change or know how to make sense of that change. And when you're, of course, feeling insecure about something or when you feel threatened by something, then the first natural instinct is to batten down the hatches. And this is, of course, what the AfD thrives on. The AfD thrives on scaring people.
Fear-mongering.
Exactly, fear-mongering. You know, politics for them is nothing else but driving fear and scaring people. You know, this might get them more votes because with their simple answers, people might feel like, oh, I got to vote for them. They want to batten down the hatches and they want to basically try to go into a cocoon. But that's not the answer and that's not the solution. That doesn't solve anything in this world. If you want to actually solve the problems today, you have to come together with other people. You got to build alliances. And, you know, each member state in the EU is too small to do something about the real big issues that we're facing. Climate change, increasing conflict in international relations, trade wars. What EU member states can do something about this by themselves? They can't. They have to actually go together with the EU, because that's the one level where you can try to make a difference and try to improve matters.
Yeah, like the far right offering very easy solutions, simple solutions to very complex problems of today's world.
Mm.
But also that rhetoric of fear-mongering is involved too. Katharina Schulz, the co-leader of the Bavarian Greens, told Politico, quote, "People tell me that they're tired of fear-mongering, that they want courageous policies." So I guess this is also another reason why people felt like they had two options, AfD or the Greens. How they do politics is very different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fear you can only counter with hope, probably. And not just hope, but also a promise that things can be better tomorrow if we work on it together. And this is this kind of constructive optimism is what the Greens were putting forth in their election campaign in Bavaria. I mean, they were saying, yes, the challenges are massive, but together we can manage them. If we come together, we can actually solve these problems and we can do something about it. And just saying everything is bad and scaring people doesn't solve anything. So I think this constructive optimism is what made the Greens very attractive. And what makes the Greens attractive also is that the fact that they have this constructive optimism, but they also show that they have governing experience to actually make the changes that are necessary and not make the changes in a radical way, which people might have thought a couple of years ago, oh, the Greens are too radical when they're in government. Everything is going to be radically changed. And then suddenly we're going to be, you know, stranded somewhere. No, they do it in a very reliable, pragmatic way that society can also work with.
Yeah. And I guess this also raises the question of whether we're witnessing just a conflict of right versus left, or is this maybe more than that? A wider shift in politics and a different kind of conflict, maybe globalists, cosmopolitans versus isolationists, or liberal alternative views versus traditional authoritarian views, or pan-Europeans versus Euroskeptics. What do you think?
I think that you are right. What we're seeing is the left versus right paradigm being supplanted by an open versus closed societies paradigm. But I am not necessarily of the opinion that the Greens need to be the one that are completely for the open society kind of side. Because I think if you have people that just are completely the cosmopolitan, urbanite, globalists, and you keep on saying that this is what you want to support and this is what you want to promote, you're neglecting all of those people who have legitimate concerns about where things are going, who have legitimate fears about, be it migration, trade, economic changes. And so I think what the Greens, of course, need to do is that, of course, they are defending an open, liberal society, but at the same time, talking to those people who are not so comfortable with these situations. What made the Greens so attractive in Bavaria and Baden-Württemberg and other places is that they were defending the open liberal social model, but at the same time, they were very rooted, very down to earth, and very aware of their local culture as well. So they had a sense of belonging. And what the Greens have, they actually had these deep roots into society, into rural areas. And I think what we need is to find also a new sense of patriotism, a kind of progressive patriotism, that you can be proud of your area, of your region, of your local traditions and your local culture, but that doesn't stop you from being open towards other cultures and other people with other backgrounds. And bringing these two together, I think that's what makes the Greens currently so successful, that we're not just all the way for an open globalist society, but that we're actually there for a society that is very aware of its culture, that is proud of its traditions, that has a sense of progressive patriotism, but that is open to all kinds of other cultures as well. So bringing these two together, you know, it's not either or, it's both.
Yeah, I wanted to elaborate on the type of political division, I guess, we're witnessing, because if this is more than just left versus right, then maybe this is a wider shift in politics. Like you said, it's a combination of many different conflicts. And because of this, I mean, this may imply that the current green upswing is unlikely to be temporary compared to, for example, the party surge in 2011.
Yes. I think our current green wave is structurally very different from the kind of green wave that we had in 2011, as you mentioned, where we were also suddenly polling in the high double digits, 20 plus percent. And I think that's because of a lot of structural changes. I mean, first of all, as I have also mentioned before, we are profiting from the weakness of others. The CDU is completely divided. The SPD is completely divided. Both parties, if there were election today, both parties would probably not even get a majority. So they wouldn't even be able to get a coalition government together. And at the same time, we have our own strengths. I mean, we were one of the only parties right now who has done a generational change. We have a change in leadership, a successful change in leadership. We've got two young party leaders, whereas in all the other parties, it's personalities that everybody has seen for many, many, many years. There has not been a generational change. And as I said, for us Greens, we're able now to also cover a wider spectrum of views. And instead of letting that divide us, we have actually used this to our advantage. I think we're turning ourselves into kind of a big tent party where we're covering many different spectrums of society. We have a conservative stream in our party, we have a liberal stream in our party, and we got a center-left stream in our party. And so, like I said, we're covering a wide array of voters, and we're not a one-issue party either. And what will be important for the European Parliament elections, particularly, is that we continue down this path and also do alliance building. I remember last European election where I was still in Brussels, 2014, we had a feminist party from Sweden that went to the socialists. We had two animal rights parties from other countries that went to the far left GUE or to the socialists. We had the pirates. We were able to get the pirates. That was one of the things. But if we want to be a bigger party that represents a more diverse set of views, then we also need to build those alliances with other progressive actors. And then I come back to that quote of Edward Kennedy that I mentioned earlier, that, you know, we can be a party that looks after animal rights, looks after minority rights, looks after women rights, looks after worker rights, looks after the environmental rights, without being each one of these one-issue parties. We can be a broader set.
Yeah, we've covered German politics at state level, but you just mentioned the Greens are currently polling very highly in Germany, nationwide, in second place, edging ever close to Angela Merkel's CDU.
Yeah.
So how do you think they can keep up this momentum, or do you think they can keep up this momentum until the upcoming European elections in May 2019?
Well, I mean, of course, I hope that we will keep up this momentum, and it'll depend on us to keep this dynamic going. And so far, I think we have good chances to keep up this momentum because the other parties, I don't see them overcoming their internal divisions and their differences. On Europe, we are the most pro-European party in Germany, which has always given us a higher vote share than we have in federal elections. So in European elections, we've usually done exceedingly well or better than we would normally do. And what we're doing right now is that we are actually determining the political debate in Germany. And that's what makes it so interesting. Usually it would be the big people's parties, the socialists or the conservatives, that would determine the political debate and the political issue of the day. Then the last couple of years, maybe it was the AfD, the far right, that managed with outrageous statements to determine the political debate. And right now, it's actually us who are shaping the debate. So we put forth a paper for what a social system should look like in future in order to overcome all of these challenges that we're facing with digitalization, with more intense competition on world markets. And that paper was discussed by all the parties. It made headlines, and not always positive ones, of course, but at least we were determining the narrative. And I think this is so important because this is also what makes the AfD so strong. The AfD makes one outrageous statement. All of the press writes about it. All of the talk shows talk about it. And of course, that gives the AfD free media coverage and makes them go up in the polls.
Which is what happened with Trump.
Exactly, which is what happened with Trump. He didn't even need to spend much on advertisement. He just needed to make a couple of outrageous statements, and he got all the coverage he wanted. And in the election campaign, in the German elections, there was a small period of maybe, I don't know, 4 weeks where there was no press coverage of the AfD. There was nothing necessarily to report, and some outrageous statements, they were just not considered worthwhile reporting. And during that time, in the voting intentions, so in the polls, the AfD went down. So it shows to me that, you know, you can also write the AfD big. If you take all of their bait, if you take every bait that they put forth, if you take every outrageous statement that they make and write about it and talk about it, the talk shows, of course, you're going to give them a lot of attention, a lot of coverage, and therefore let them go up in the polls. But I don't think we need to jump over every outrageous statement that they make. Sometimes an outrageous statement is just that, a stupid outrageous statement, and it doesn't deserve any more attention.
Yeah. Even this week, the Green Surge in Germany was covered by BBC, New York Times, and Telegraph in the UK. So that really shows, I mean, mainstream media covering green politics and the green parties, that really shows that this momentum can be kept up until at least until the upcoming European elections.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, we're entering a new phase as well. We've had our phase where the Green was a protest movement in the 80s. We've had the phase, what we call a project phase, where the Greens were for the first time in government in Germany under a red-green government, where we were able to pursue our project, so the energy transition, for example. And now we're in a phase where the Greens are becoming an orientation party, where we're giving orientation to the broad set of society. And with that, it's also because we are able to talk to different spectrums of society. Like I said, I mean, if you look at Minister-President Winfried Kretschmann, he just published a book on what a progressive conservatism looks like, you know, providing a view of a green kind of conservatism that is progressive and forward thinking and at the same time keeps tradition in mind. And our party chair, Robert Habeck, has written a book on the German word Heimat. So, you know, a sense of home, a sense of belonging, a sense of progressive patriotism. So we have all these different views that are all coming together. And that's usually what a People's Party does. A People's Party is able to channel a wide variety of views in their one party. But the People's Party in Germany are not able to do that anymore. They're being pulled apart by these diverse set of views. And the Greens, on the other hand, they are able to now provide a platform for a diverse set of views. And I think that makes a difference. And that's why this surge, this green wave, I think is structural rather than just momentary.
Yeah. Great and hopeful note to end the interview. Once again, Rodrik, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. And it was a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
All right, folks, that's our show. You can follow us on Twitter at BigGreenPawPod. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the show so you can hear it every 2 weeks. You can find us on any podcast platform.
If you're subscribed already, please do leave us a rating or review. It helps people find the show. And lastly, if you want to give us feedback, email us at biggreenpoliticspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much and see you in 2 weeks.